We have six cases on our docket for today. Two of them have been submitted and resolved on the briefs. We have four cases that are scheduled for oral argument this afternoon. The first case is In Re Vienna, 16-1062. Mr. Mathis? Now, I understand you've divided your time, your 50 minutes, you're saving 2 minutes for rebuttal, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you may proceed.
I'll start out with two issues, and I'll start out with one on patentability. As you can see from the instant case, as well as other cases I've asked you to judicial notice, PTO introduced 101 patentability in their books, Part 1 and Part 2 of the Supreme Court's Alice Corporation decision. Nothing more than meaningless exercises. Accordingly, I am pleased that this court has, with its EnFish and Bandai opinions, adopted positions that my clients have put forth for the last year and a half, including the position that claims are just not abstract simply because they can be done by an abstract, because they can be done by a generic computer. Two, the prohibition of just discounting claim limitations when determining what a claim is directed to under Part 1 of Alice. And three, expressly requiring the applications to factual assertions that claim limitations, individually and as an ordered combination, are well-known, conventional, and routine.
Counsel, when I look at the claims, what I see is claims that are directed to a system to place value on real estate.
Well, you would be obviously omitting the fact that you're doing special things to this to the data. Yes, you are producing valuations for real estate, Your Honor. But I'm not just talking about, I'm just not claiming valuations for real estate. We are doing pre-processing, creating huge databases of pre-processed data that have specific utility.
So show me in the claims then. Where are the claims directed to something other than this valuation of real estate?
Well, if you look at, let's say the first independent claim talks about not only populating a database.
What claim number is that?
138. Okay. A lot of prosecution, right? We're not only just generating ABM values, a plurality of ABM values, and creating a database of them, but we're constantly updating these.
Okay, 133?
138.
Where is 138?
You briefed 133.
Claim 133, I'm sorry. I apologize. So in this case, with 133, you're doing something, and again, when you talk about whether something's abstract, you ask whether it's, and again, you look at what you this court talked about Bandai. It's not whether it's done by a computer that makes it abstract. Is what you're now, the analysis is forgetting what's going happening with a computer. You're looking at ignoring the computer, whether the steps as they are recited are routine, conventional, well known. And in this case, there's not even the assertion of this. I mean, Bandai, this court sit there and said, well, look, the evidence isn't there. You know,
but let's talk about this specific claim. What specific language in this claim do you suggest has more than an abstract idea of generating valuation?
Okay, in this case, repeatedly updating those valuations, Your Honor. And that has a very real-world utility, as I'd like to get to.
But that's what valuation is all about, isn't it? You know,
I'm not just claiming evaluations. Again, I'm talking about doing something very special, something very different.
What? Show me the claims, what's special and different. Don't step into the step two of the Alice inquiry.
I'm still in step one, Your Honor.
Okay.
Okay. In this case, I'm saying you're creating a database of ABM values. Now, in this case, you know, if this were just about saying, "Oh, I'm providing ABM values to users," that's one thing. I'm not saying that. We're creating we're creating databases of these things, and we're constantly updating these.
So you think updating a value is not an abstract idea? How is updating a value any different from generating that value in the first place? It's just generating a new updated value.
Here's the difference, Your Honor. You have to look at the claim as a whole.
But you refuse to point to specific language in the claim that suggests something that's not an abstract idea.
It's exactly not an abstract idea, and I'll tell you why.
Let me ask you this. Do you think creation of a valuation is an abstract idea or something that would be ineligible under Step 1 of ALICE?
Well, here's the problem with your question, Your Honor.
Can you answer my question?
Absolutely. I don't think it's possible, Your Honor. I don't think it's possible because...
So you obviously are familiar with Bilski, I assume. Bilski was a method, a business method.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Isn't a valuation method for real estate a business method?
Yes.
So it's ineligible under Bilski.
No, well, first of all, this isn't a classic Bilski. No, Bilski, there's actually business being done. This is not business. This is not, doing something, trading, quid pro quo, something, some value for other. This is a tool. This is a tool that provides data for people who want to do business. That's completely different from what's going on in Bilski. And second, to say that not all business methods, if you're going to say that all business methods are abstract, well, okay. But unless you're going to declare at this point right now that all business methods are abstract, then you have to sit there and take into account what these claims do, say that, okay, these claims do something specific, and that at least consider the why they do something special. And there are two advantages that I point out in front of the board, and I point out here, that you can do with this tool. This is not a business, it's a tool.
Well, I don't think anyone's claiming that all business methods are abstract. On the other hand, if this claim is allowed, you're going to just pretty much preempt everything that deals with data concerning valuation of real estate, because that's what this claim is directed to. Show me what's in the claim that limits that abstractness.
Okay, first of all, Your Honor, I'm going to take the opposite position. Nothing, absolutely nothing with respect to AVMs is preempted by this claim except for the very narrow claim terms. No one, to my knowledge, has ever done anything like that. No one ever created a database.
What narrows the claim terms? What is it that narrows them?
In this case, just creating a database of AVMs, a plurality of AVMs, but constantly updating these things to reflect market values. And it has two specific utilities that no one has ever seen before. And one of these...
Can I ask you, but put aside for a minute the strain of abstract idea doctrine that's specifically connected with entering into commercial relations. Put that aside. Instead, talk to me for a minute about the related but distinct strain about gathering and manipulating information, which you then want very much to use. Why is this not that?
Well, seeing in your opinions, I know you're very familiar with Bandai and Enfish. And if you're just going to say that it's a software, again, this court is held.
I didn't use the term software. I said gathering and manipulating information.
This isn't information.
Well,
if you're just going to discount the claim terms here, this is abstract. But if you're going to hold everything to that point, are you going to give the claim limitations weight or are you not?
Which specific claim limitation do you think renders it non-abstract?
In this case, the constant reevaluation of the values, so that the claim, database values are always current. They always reflect the market value. Here, no matter what time you look at it, at this database, you have, at that moment, values that are current to the market, and you can do a lot of things with that. And not only just...
I'm not suggesting that this might be a very useful tool. That doesn't mean valuation and, up-to-date valuation isn't abstract.
Well, and the point is, the way I see that this court has talked about in the past with abstract is that you have some sort of total human analog. So if you're going to say, if there's a total human analog, there's no evidence of it here, Your Honors. If you're going to say that, okay, I've got my pen and pencil, I'm doing this, forget the computer, forget there's any computer even involved. My reading of Bandai especially is that you are looking at what's going on. And right now we are creating a database of pre-processed data. You can look at it at any given time, and every value on there is current at any given time. And this leads to an advantage, Your Honors. Any moment you want to look at this thing, any moment, you're going to know what the value, the proper value of the house, that particular property is. And with that, you can determine undervalued properties But also, here's an advantage that I think isn't very important.
I still fail to see how the fact that you can generate instantaneous valuation distinguishes this from any of these type of cases that we've held. In BuySafe, we held something like third-party guarantees that are done over the computer, which can only be done on the computer, are nonetheless an abstract idea. Isn't this the same thing? This is generating resale values, or real estate valuation. Clearly, a person cannot by him or herself do this because they don't have the computing power. But
in BuySafe, you had a human equivalent. You had the human analog, and you made that distinction.
Again, how do you not have a human equivalent here of somebody sitting down and gathering the information and saying, this is a real estate valuation? Humans have been making real estate valuations for hundreds of years.
Yes, but they haven't made it. Again, as this court has pointed out, every claim has something abstract. Let's call that the abstract part. I'm just not claiming that. I'm claiming providing ABM values and constantly redoing them so we have constantly refreshed values that are current. And in that way, it's different. There's no human analog. There's no evidence at that point that anybody has ever done anything like this.
How is there not? Say you live in a town that has three houses and you have a real estate person that knows the real estate market so well that every single day that person can tell you this house is worth X, this house is worth X, and this house is worth Y. Isn't that constant up-to-date valuation? And isn't your method just doing it on a computer and using the computer power to do that on a large scale?
Now you talked about Bandai. In this case, this isn't just a valuation. This is a special type of valuation as well. AVMs are not a substitute for appraisals. As you pointed out in Bandai, there's this thing called human judgment, and the prior art was using human judgment, and whereas opposed to McGrow was, or let's say that the plaintiff was using distinct algorithms. And you say they're not the same thing. If you have an algorithm that can replace human judgment, or if you had evidence of that, that might be something else. But there's no evidence of that.
The claims in McGrow, though, did point to specific rules and establish how those rules are used. And this is what we've been asking you. What's in this claim?
The constant re-update, Your Honor. I keep going back to that.
But it's very general. It has no specifics on how this is done or the like. It doesn't have a specific algorithm on how to do something. It's not like EnFish, which had a specific relational database described in the specification and the patent claims. This says, you think that assuming valuation is abstract, which I think you have to. You think the patentable subject matter here is the fact that it repeatedly updates in real time?
Your Honor, can you point to anybody who's done it before? Because, again, this court's repeated holdings. Has it been done before?
No, I think this court's repeated holdings have not been, has it done before. There's lots of things that were never possible to do before computers were invented and computer processing speeds got advanced. That doesn't render them patentable.
And I am not relying on speed, Your Honor. I am relying on the algorithm. I'm relying on the specific algorithm and the way it's handled.
Then where is the algorithm in your claim?
The repeated updates, Your Honor.
That's not an algorithm.
No.
Repeated updates is not an algorithm. Is there an algorithm in any of these claims?
How is it not an algorithm? I mean, it's not a mathematical computation. It's not a mathematical formula.
It doesn't tell you how to do this at all. It just said repeatedly update.
Yeah, and that itself is an algorithm.
Was there something like a claim construction of the term automatic valuation method?
Yes, sir.
What was it?
It's a completely computer-generated valuation.
Can you show me, give me a page citation for the claim construction?
Let's see. Hold on a second. I'm almost out of time.
Yeah, you're a minute into your rebuttal, I'll restore your time. Go ahead and answer Judge Toronto's question.
And this is actually an entire section about the difference between AVMs and what was asserted by the Patent Office.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking for something in the board's opinion that says for purposes of our analysis, we are adopting the following claim construction.
Oh, they passed it by, Your Honor. That's one of the problems with this case. They didn't talk about it. The only standard the board used throughout was the examiner found. No law, no evidence. The examiner found was the only standard in 101, 102, 103.
And you proposed to the board what claim construction for automatic valuation method? Where's that in the joint appendix?
I don't know about...
Did you propose claim construction of the terms?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay.
In great detail.
That's what we're asking you about.
Okay. Give me one moment, sir. Okay. Appendix page starting on 108, JE 108.
Where specifically as to the automatic valuation method, and then the related question is where specifically about anything, any interpretation of the term repeatedly update, whether that means instantaneously, constantly, or just something more than once.
We didn't even get to that, Your Honor. Didn't even get to that point because of the conclusory nature of the board's decisions as well as the examiner's decisions. Didn't even get to that level.
Okay. I think we'll restore some of your time for rebuttal, but you're well into your time now. Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Kelly?
May I please report? Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'll just go right to the question, Judge Toronto, that you asked. The board at A46 adopted the proper construction of the appellant, which was related to the standard set by the standard setting body. So, page A46, which is the board's initial opinion, the beginning of the paragraph that starts at the bottom of the page, accepting the IOCC definition. We agree with the examiner's determination that Sklar's disclosure teaches AVMs. And the IOCC definition, Your Honors, is at page 315 of the
It's not quoted in the board opinion?
No, Your Honor. At this point,
I'm sorry, it's at what page? Sorry,
315 of the joint appendix.
351.
So we know what AVMs are, but was there any discussion of whether there's a specific definition that would further define constantly updating or flesh out how that's done?
So first of all, constantly updating is not in the claim. There's been a lot of talk this morning.
Repeatedly.
Real time, right. It's repeatedly updated, which just means it has to be updated. The debate about the claim construction between the applicant and the PTO was whether or not any amount of human interaction was absolutely prohibited by the agent. That's what the board was discussing in its opinion. And so when the board cites to the standard setting body's definition, that doesn't have any prohibition of human input. An AVM, I think fairly in light of the standard setting body's definition, is simply an automated value method. It's a way of doing with a computer what was conventionally done with a person, a professional.
Is it a special type of valuation, or is it just reporting market price?
It's up to the modeler, Katrina. It's however it gets modeled. And this is what is right in the definition itself by the standard setting body. At the end of the paragraph, it's 2.1.1 on page A315. The very last sentence says, credibility of an AVM is dependent upon the data used and the skills of the modeler for producing it. So essentially what an AVM is some sort of statistical modeling that a modeler comes up with so that they can very quickly come up with the prices of properties.
And you don't even mean anything fancy by statistical. They could just take all of the comparables, and every new sale in the neighborhood generates a new piece of data for the comparables, and you have some formula which you think is sensible for translating comparables into a value. That would do it. Is that
not
right?
Not even that complicated, Judge Tron. Oh. In fact, if you get into this...
That didn't seem that complicated.
Well, the most basic definition is take an old sale of the house, figure out approximately how much real estate has increased in value, and just modify it in that way. That's in the standard. So it's basically any model you
but
want
you
to
can't, you can't have a fairly complex AVMs, right? For right. example... what is a blue house worth on a Wednesday?
Yes, you could have very complicated AVMs, and the Patent Office is not here to suggest today that there's no innovation in the AVM space anywhere that might be that might not be eligible. In other words, I can imagine somebody coming up with some interesting statistical method that does something in some way that has never been done before. And maybe that's eligible. I don't know, because we don't have that here today. If you look at the application itself, where IANA discusses AVMs, what you'll see is almost nothing. So, at page...
Where would we see almost nothing?
Okay. Page 1984 of the record... Paragraph 17, this is where the application begins to talk about AVMs. And what it says in the second sentence of that paragraph is, against industry trends and traditions, the inventors have invested greatly in their own AVM technology and applied it in unconventional, novel ways. There is no mention of the technology. If you skip ahead, perhaps searching for this novel AVM that they describe, you can go to page 1989, which is where they come back to AVMs, at paragraph 36. The applicant is referring to the AVM device in a figure that shows box 230. And they write, this is about halfway through the paragraph, the exemplary AVM device 230 is based on a combination of heuristic and statistical technologies. However, it should be appreciated that the particular form and functionality of the AVM can vary from embodiment to embodiment as the technology evolves or otherwise can be found advantageous, he says it like, in various circumstances.
And is
that's it.
And what, if anything, is in the application about the term repeatedly updating that you suggested, I think, when you started that it means... as long as you do it more than once, that's repeated, and I think your counterpart on the other side says it means something more like constantly, instantaneously, so that you have current information whenever you want it.
Your Honor, I think the language of the claims replicates the specification itself. It's just that it updates the AVMs. If you look at the specification, what it talks about the invention being is the pre-population of the database. In other words, rather than have someone come and ask for an AVM and get charged $25, they're going to do it in advance so that when you go to look at a database with AVMs, they're already going to be in there for you. That's basically, as I understand it, that's what they came up with. Not how to do an AVM, but essentially when to do an AVM. And it's not just before it's asked for, it's a little bit before it's asked for so that you don't have to calculate it on the fly, so that it's pre-calculated. That's as much as I can glean from this application, because there's nothing in this application that talks about how their AVM works. There's nothing that talks about how their computer system works, other than the generic sticking together of computers. So if you step
so
back...
So there's no suggestion that the patent claims a automatic update to the database every, 5 minutes or 1 minute or 30 seconds or maybe a week. There's no...
No, there's no speed that I, there certainly isn't any speed claimed, and I don't recall from the application, and perhaps Mr. Mathis can point us to it when he stands back up. I don't recall anything in the application about the speed of the update.
Do you think it would make any difference?
No, I don't think it would make any difference, Your Honor. Particularly because the cache memory discussed in the prior art reference says that the length of time it can be saved is up to the user themselves. So this idea of saving information and how long it can be saved, that's talked about right in the prior art reference. And I want to step back to the general inquiry we're doing here, which is eligibility and how we assess it at the Patent Office and when it later comes up in courts. Because there's been a lot of discussion in the briefing about the need for some sort of level of facts, of a factual showing before we can establish eligibility or ineligibility. And that's just not consistent with this court's case law. In every case that I've seen from this court, the inquiry about whether or not the invention is directed to an abstract idea or something that's eligible for patenting is an inward-looking inquiry. The idea is to figure out what they invented, to figure out the nature of the invention and what it's directed to, and whether or not there's something more in those claims that pulls an invention that's directed to an abstract idea out of the ineligibility space and into the eligibility space.
But at the second step, obviously related to but different from the first step, there is some inquiry that the Supreme Court said had something to do with whether something is conventional. How is it not at some level a factual question, what is conventional? It may be something we can take judicial notice of. It may be something that we can look at the specification and the submission in the motion for judgment on the pleadings, the motion to dismiss, the motion for summary judgment, whatever, and say, have you shown us that it is either claimed or said in the specification that it's unconventional or shown us that it's unconventional? But surely that's, if the question is it unconventional or conventional, that how can that be something other than a fact question?
Because, Your Honor, I don't think the question is as simple as that. It's not just, is the other stuff in the claim conventional? The question is, if you look at the limitations beyond the abstract notion of the claim, what is it that's happening with those limitations? Is it something, if there's a computer recited, is it something that's making the computer operate in a meaningfully different way? Is it something that's making the recited technology do something more than simply carry out the abstract idea? I understand the question that if there's this talk of conventionality, why is it not a question of fact? And there was an argument that came up before the Supreme Court, actually in the Alice argument, where one of the justices said, well, but if we go back 40 years and the application recited doing something on a computer, it would have been patentable then, right? Because there were no computers then. So then the ineligible application becomes suddenly eligible. And what I would say to that, Your Honor, is that you can figure that out from the application itself. Because if someone invented a computer, if they invented an AVM, you could see it in the application. They would explain it. They would enable it. They would describe it, and it would be novel and non-obvious.
I mean,
there's nothing
it,
of the type.
Right. I mean, as you know, there certainly have been questions raised about the extent to which 102-103 inquiry is now incorporated into 101. I think what you just said is a variety of parts of 112 inquiry are now also. Do we have to actually figure out if something is described, is enabled, et cetera?
Well, Your Honor, what I would say that you have to figure out and what the inquiry drives us to do is to read the application in its own context and to figure out from the disclosure of the inventor what the inventive concept is. Is the inventive concept some sort of technique that makes an AVM model?
Well, isn't the question not what the inventive concept is whether there's any inventive concept expressed in the claims. I mean, that's a little bit of a different inquiry.
It's a little different.
Because the latter is where you would consider whether any of the steps are conventional or not. Or
I think so, Judge Reyna, but what I want to try to get away from, and maybe it's too late for all of us to get away from it, is this just the collapsing of 102 and 103 with 101. Because although the language of the courts suggests conventionality is required, it suggests looking and thinking about what was known, and is the other stuff in the claim what's known?
Well, I mean, I think that conventionality is something that is strictly considered in step two. You know, I don't think you have to think that you we're conflating or you know, bringing them together. The notion of conventionality is in step two, not step one.
I agree, okay. Your Honor, and I didn't mean to suggest that, that anybody was trying to conflate step two and step one. I was trying to speak to the question of what is necessary for the step two showing, and if what's necessary is some sort of analysis of is the other stuff in the claim already known, that feels a little bit like a factual question.
Right, so I think part of what you said, and I think there's a there's some of our opinions that at least point in this direction, is to look at what the patentee has asserted to be the advance. And you can look throughout the patent. You've got to, first of all, find a term in the claim that is at least potentially an asserted advance on the eligible side of the line, something that we can call technological, and then look to see if indeed there's a, you know, arguable asserted advance based on the spec that says, yeah, we actually think that we made the advance on the non-abstract side of the abstract line. We've tended now to call that a technological advance, and that you can look at the spec to do that, and you don't have to decide are they right about that, namely, is it in fact novel and non-obvious, but that at least is the assertion. Is that something like what you're saying?
Very much, Your Honor, and that is how our examiners are trained. That is what our examiner guidance has said over and over again, looking to this court's and the Supreme Court's case law for guidance, that the question is how the inventor describes the invention, how the inventor characterizes the something more and what's done with it. And once an examiner goes through and makes a reasoned explanation that puts the inventor on notice as to why there's an abstract idea there, step one, and then step two, why it is the other things in the claim don't pull it out of abstractness, that's all an examiner has to do. So we tell the examiners, once you find out what the claim is directed to, if it's abstract, then look at the other stuff in the claim, identify the other claim limitations, and then further explain, in your view, why those other claim limitations are not being used by the inventor in the way described in the application to do something more than what a computer ordinarily does, what an output device ordinarily does.
So this briefing came in before our decision in Macro, and but I expected that the parties were going to submit some sort of supplemental filing and either to use that case to their advantage or to kind of deflect any disadvantage. We didn't get that. How do you see Macro into fitting into this case?
Your Honor, I see it fitting.
Go ahead. Yes.
I see it fitting in exactly the way I described all of the other cases working. What happened in Macro is that the court looked into the specification. And that's why I thought the case was somewhat significant, only in the sense that it just followed the line of every case before it, which was it looked to the specification. It tried to figure out what was in there and whether what was in there was something more. So it's significant because it goes the other way, yes, in its outcome, but it's also significant in that it doesn't suddenly require some sort of factual showing that's above and beyond even an obviousness or anticipation showing, like the aim is trying to argue.
Okay. You have a question?
No, that's fine.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Mathis, we'll restore you back to a minute.
First of all, Your Honor, you've never claimed to have invented a new and different AVM. We're using any form of AVM because the type of AVM isn't really important. What is important is the end tool. The end tool provides specific advantage. And as I discussed in front of the board, Amazon found that a tenth of a second would cost them 1% of business. 2-second delay. Let's say if we can save 2 seconds.
Can I ask you this? Let's say hypothetically we conclude that the notion of generating and repeatedly updating an AVM value is an abstract idea. What is there in the claim that would take it out of that world?
Timing. Excuse me, Your Honor. Timing. The advantages that we can provide, and one of the few...
I've just said, though, hypothetically, repeatedly updating is an abstract idea. That's timing. That takes care of your timing argument.
Well, I guess we always look to the dependent claims, including...
I don't want to talk about the dependent claims. I want to talk about your independent claim that we've been talking about. Does it add anything beyond a general purpose computer and a database?
We have to go to step two, Your Honor. And step two, I say, because of that issue of timing, the doing it before versus the doing it after, that is the difference. And that's what I think takes it, is that something extra that makes it patentable.
Okay, I think we have your argument, Counselor. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.